Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest on this episode, but an excellent one. Someone who's been on this podcast before and is really, really becoming a terrific voice when it comes to basketball. It is ESPN's Andrea Carter. You will see her on ESPN's studio coverage on both ABC and ESPN when it comes to the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 round. And then she will be in Cleveland for the Final Four. Well, she will be on site as part of their studio coverage. Again, just if you're into women's basketball, you already know it's been an incredible tournament. And Andrea came on for 40 minutes, and we talked about a lot of different things, from sort of the viewership of the tournament to how much is too much, if that's the right thing, of Caitlin Clark publicity. We get into some potential matchups that could happen as we head down the road. And then we play a little mock draft, too, for women's college basketball. So I think you're going to enjoy it. Andrea's really, really thoughtful and smart and knows the game, and she's great to talk to on this stuff. So Andrea Carter coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, very happy to have a return guest. Andrea Carter has been on this podcast before. She's an ESPN and SEC Network basketball analyst, host, reporter in there as well. And she will be, or she is, I should say, part of ESPN's studio coverage of the women's basketball tournament. She will be in Cleveland for the Final Four. I mean, she can tell us this, but I believe she's in Bristol prior to that. We are taping this prior to the Sweet 16 round. Those games start Friday, March 29th, and the matchups are just absolutely incredible. And just selfishly, I mean, no offense to UCLA or Colorado, but I cannot tell you how much I want LSU versus Iowa, just because as a fan of Gladiator and every single, Coliseum movie, that's what I want to see. And with that, I bring in Andrea Carter. Welcome back to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
You got it. Okay. So let's start here. This is a very broad question. Okay. You can take this any way you want. You could take it on the basketball end, or you could sort of take it on like the cultural end of how many people are talking about this. How would you evaluate the tournament so far?
The tournament so far has been incredible. Not just the games, the recognition, the people that are tuning in and watching, the visibility of it, the numbers that these games are putting up, the competition level, all of that has just been incredible. And the individual performances that we've seen, like, they have just been, there have been so many stars that have showed up, whether it's 30 point performances, 15 points, 15 rebounds, or, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's just, it's such a big moment. And the players, I've said this so many times, like, coming into this tournament, I was like, this is such a huge moment, and the players are ready to meet the moment. And I think that's the most exciting part.
I agree with you. So far in this tournament, what's been interesting to me, and for any listener who doesn't know, although I think if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know this. So I covered women's basketball for a long time at Sports Illustrated, and not on a day-to-day basis, but sort of like for the big events and certainly for, Final Four, et cetera. And one of the things, Andrea, and you know this too because you played in this, the first round of games for a long time, there was sort of just this assumption that, like, the higher ranked team is going to blow away the you know, the better team's just going to blow away the you know, the number 16 or number 15 seed. These games would not be competitive. And while we still see some of that, what's really changed, in my opinion, over the last, it feels like 5 to 6 or 7 years, is that first round game between like 8-9, 7-10, and then certainly the second round game. These games are so tight because some of these other programs have really moved up. And that's why I think this tournament has been sensational, is that we're getting less, like, you know what I mean, 30-point blowouts, and we're getting games that are going down to the wire. And that is what's great, or has always been great, about the men's tournament, is that, like, you can get a second-round game where it's, you know, it's like 40 lead changes. And that's what I've seen so far from this women's tournament. And I wonder if you agree, or if you know how you see it in terms of those terms.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are just some of these games that you see, especially early on, that they are competitive games. I mean, we've seen 2 seeds compete, have to compete. We've seen 3 seeds have to compete. We've seen a couple teams take LSU and have leads at some point. You know, you have to give Middle Tennessee some credit. Middle Tennessee upset Louisville. That was an 11-6 game. You know, so we're seeing more opportunities for teams to pull off some of these upsets. And I think it speaks to, one, the talent level being spread out more in women's college basketball, and there being just an overall elevation in the skill set that these athletes have and the game plans that they have. And it's been a lot of fun. That's been definitely one of the best parts, just the competitive level of these games. I mean, we saw Stanford in a tight one with Iowa State. That game was so much fun. Like, the back and forth, the way that game went back and forth was incredible. So, you know, and for Stanford to be a 2 seed, I was a 7 seed. That game went to overtime. So, you know, those are just a couple of examples. You know, Oregon State and Nebraska, that was, you know, I think a 3-6 maybe. And, you know, just the fun competition level of these games has been incredible for sure.
Yeah, that's one thing that's different. During my time, Stanford would be a 1. They're now a 2. So, you know, I mean, it just sort of like extends like the level of talent that's across the country. I want to, as someone who's on air, it's not your job necessarily to like follow the viewership numbers or, you know, have any kind of impact or where programming is. But, you know, you're a person who's part of the sport. You played the sport at a very high level. And so, like, when you learn that the Iowa-West Virginia game draws 4.9 million on ESPN, that's the largest, I mean, absolutely shatters the record for the largest television audience for a women's tournament game ever prior to the Final Four. What is your reaction to someone who's on-air talent and someone who cares about the sport?
My reaction is just pure excitement when I see some of these numbers, because the games are so good. So if I could imagine, when I started thinking about, like, wow, millions tuned in to watch this game, whoever it was, you know, whatever the game is. But, you know, just thinking about the Iowa West Virginia game, you know, like, millions tuned in to watch that game, and it was a great game. Like, both teams made plays on both sides. It was competitive. It was fun. There were, you know, there are people who may have watched that game and fallen in love with the way West Virginia plays basketball. And, you know, you start to see just all of these different athletes. And that's the best part for me. Like, even, I don't know how many tuned in to watch South Carolina take on North Carolina. And obviously that game was a significant blowout, right? South Carolina won by a landslide, but South Carolina still just looked so good. Like, the plays they were making, the way they were executing, the way they were connected on that, on both sides of the floor. So whenever I think about the amount of people that are tuning in, I know they're seeing stars. I know they're seeing individual performances. I trust they're seeing team performances. I trust they're seeing pace, people getting up and down the floor, and effort, people diving on the floor, and also excitement, people talking a little trash. Like, all of that stuff is really exciting for me, for the game of basketball.
I know. I love, by the way, when on Twitter or X, like, when people, like, they're like stunned that women curse and like women's college basketball. It's like, right. It's so fantastic. Oh my God. Women say the word fuck on the court. Like really? Like,
right.
People get competitive. That's the shit that happens. I just cursed twice on my own podcast, Andre. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yeah. All right. So, I'm not really sorry, by the way. So one of the things, I think we talked about this last time too, one of the things in writing about your place for as long as I have that always comes up is what kind of buy-in will women's basketball get when it comes to shoulder programming, like GetUp, SportsCenter, First Takes, et cetera. The game programming part of it is there. Like the resources that you guys put to women's basketball is significant. The programming windows are getting better. But when I talked to women's college basketball executives at ESPN, it was always like, that was like one of the last steps internally was like, can we get our colleagues in, on these other sort of shows or entities to talk about it? What have you been seeing this month regarding that?
I've seen a ton of it. I mean, I've had the coordinating producers for both GetUp and First Take talk to me. I've been on the show. I went back and forth with Stephen A. Smith about Caitlin Clark and her college resume and what would happen if she won. And then, you know, that gets put out there and on Twitter or X, Samuel L. Jackson chimes in and gives his 2 cents. And they, you know, First Take and GetUp want me on again. I've been on there a couple of times already, and they want me on this Friday as well as next Monday, next Tuesday, and then the Monday and Tuesday after the national championship, you know? And so I think that there's definitely buy-in. And now that the conversations that we're having on First Take and GetUp, they're getting attention once they are put out there on social media, you know, people are adding into the conversation and giving their opinions. And so I think for, you know, the coordinating producers of those shows to see women's college basketball being a hot topic and people wanting to talk about it and wanting to jump in the conversation after the show's over, that's a good sign, because who knows, you know, everything is a slow build. You can't expect everything to happen at once. You know, like a few years ago, what do we have, 2 college game day shows or maybe 1? And then last year we had 3, and then this year we had 5, right? It's not logical to expect a big jump in everything. You know, like we're not going to all of a sudden have women's college basketball on GetUp every single day or First Take every single day. But with the tournament going so well and there being so many stars and there being so many conversations again that people want to have, this going really well, and I try to put a little bit of pressure on myself to perform in that way when I have the opportunity to do so and do a good job explaining my thoughts on these players in the game to draw more people in. But when I think about it going well at the end of the season, who knows, maybe next year, if there's a non-conference matchup that has 2 exciting players and a little bit of spiciness involved in the matchup, maybe First Take and GetUp reach out about that one. Like maybe we have little segments before the tournament starts, because now people are locked in on these superstars and they're locked in on what they're doing and how they're performing and how they're playing. And so I think the better it goes in this tournament, maybe, who knows, we'll see it earlier in the year. And then when we see it earlier in the year, maybe we have a segment the next summer because a transfer happens and they want me to come on and talk about that transfer, right? And so it's a slow build. But right now, GetUp and First Take and SportsCenter, they've been really bought in. You know, the other night we came in and started SportsCenter. It was me, it was Rebecca Lobo, and we did 30 minutes of women's college basketball. It was with Zubin, and he brought so much energy and excitement, and we showed 3 highlights and like broke it all down. It's just so cool. It's something that you'd never really seen before. So the short answer is I'm feeling a lot more buy-in, and the long answer is I see a lot more coming down the road because of hopefully the success that we're having when we do get these opportunities to go on these sort of flagship staple shows for the company.
Yeah, that's progress, and that's good to hear.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is a big topic I wanted to talk to you about when I knew you were coming on. And there's been a lot of discussion about this. And I actually think the discussion is great for the sport, no matter where you land on. There's been a lot of thoughtful people sort of on both sides here. Unquestionably, unquestionably, there is a lot of interest in Caitlin Clark. Like, that's the obvious statement of the year. You see what Iowa's games are doing in terms of viewership. She is bringing along a lot of casual fans to women's basketball who may not have ever seen a women's basketball game before this year. ESPN, in understanding that, like, there's a lot of interest here, for the opening round, sent Holly Rowe to Iowa City to report on Caitlin Clark, essentially to sort of whatever Iowa and Caitlin Clark were doing, you're going to have one of your signature voices on site doing this. I think that's fantastic. To me, that kind of coverage raises all boats. I think you have to take advantage of this player who is a once-in-a-generation player in terms of interest. I'm not saying she's the best player ever. In my opinion, she's not, but that's not really the point. Point is, like, there is massive interest in her, and maybe we've never seen anyone have more interest in college than her. The opposite side of this would be, it's too much of a focus on one person. There are a lot of people from West Virginia, obviously, who are complaining that they didn't think they got their due during the game. And I think people were, you know, at least the ones I follow who I like and who are thoughtful, like, they were, you know, they were making fair points on each side. How do you see it? And again, I know you work for ESPN, so there's a little navigation here for you. But I was very curious how you sort of saw the idea of what coverage Caitlin Clark is getting and what that means sort of broadly.
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, this is the first time that I can recall a reporter being sent for one player. And obviously what Caitlin has done has, you know, the records, and she was going to possibly break another record in this, you know, stretch in this tournament run. And so I do think it's my first time recalling something like this happening. Obviously, I haven't been involved in the company terribly long. And when I was playing, I wasn't really paying attention to what everyone else was doing. But for me, I think the biggest thing moving forward, because there are fair points made on both sides, I think the biggest key is, this is the first time this has happened, but it probably won't be the last. Like, when you think about some of the players that we have in this game right now, just freshmen right now, that could have incredible careers the same way Caitlin has. Like, think about what Caitlin did her freshman year and how her career has grown. And that's part of the best, that's probably the best part about women's college basketball at times, is that you do get to see these players grow and develop, and they get to put up these big numbers and stack up these career accolades because they're so good and they start their freshman year. So for Juju Watkins or Hannah Hidalgo or Mylaysia Full Wiley, you know, I think the best thing would be, when the opportunity presents itself in the future, to give the same coverage to players that are deserving down the road. If it is one reporter and following that player or that team, and maybe it's, instead of, you know, we have one reporter for that team and then we have one reporter for the game, or we have, you know, we've had situations where we have multiple reporters on games. So, you know, maybe if the resources are available, it's, yeah, there's one reporter that spends time with that team and that player, and then the other reporter spends time with the other teams that that one team or that one player is going to face, if that makes sense. So I think the best thing we can do is, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving, you know, one player a ton of coverage as they're chasing records and trying to do things that we haven't seen done before. The best part is, we will have the opportunity to do it again, because there are, like I said, some unbelievable freshmen in our game and even sophomores in the game that I think people are going to want to follow very closely. And so how we do that while giving the other teams, you know, the coverage that they also deserve, is just going to be a point of growth, not only for the game, but for our coverage as well. You know, I mean, we're doing things that maybe we haven't done before. And so, you know, on the same front of learning and applying and doing even better for the next opportunity, you know, like, the next time this happens, it'll be amazing and even better than the first time that it happened. So I think the good news is, there are some great players that I feel like will follow very closely, and that's okay. Like, that happens, though. That happens on a lot of levels. There are famous soccer players that get, you know, one reporter with them that's following them or tracking their journey, or certain players have documentary series that follow them and are tracking their journey. We have three women's college basketball players. They're going to be in a documentary on ABC this year, which is incredible. You know, Caitlin Clark, Kiki Rice, and Camilla Cardoso. So I think, as all of this is happening, the best part, like I said, already multiple times now. I'm just excited thinking about it, is that it's, you know, we have great players that we can do it with again, and we can do it even better and show people like, hey, we're learning and we're growing too, and we hear you. And we will do better on all fronts whenever this opportunity presents itself again.
The Sweet 16 and Elite Eight rounds are coming up. And if I'm correct, you'll be in the studio in Bristol?
I will be, yes.
Okay. When these games happen, let's just take like Saturday, March 30th. Studio comes on 12:30 p.m. on ABC, and then there's four games that day, including a big one, LSU, UCLA, Colorado, Iowa, as well. The where are you watching the, like, do you sit in the studio all day and they roll televisions out to you so you can watch it? What is that sort of experience like for you?
Yeah, for the early rounds, obviously these games now we won't really have to dedicate so many eyes and our attention to so many happening at once. But yeah, we'll have, you know, we're in the studio. I mean, this last weekend was, I mean, we're 12 to 15 hours and it's just straight. I mean, we have two little like six packs of TVs that are, when we have them on different channels, and then we have this huge like LED wall that we can put different games on. And we'll have, you know, some that we're paying more closely attention, like giving more of our attention to. Like sometimes Rebecca and I will split them, you know, so she'll take a few and I'll take a few. That way she can give really deep analysis on those and I can kind of jump in, and then I can give deep analysis on a few others. We kind of team up when it's a really heavy day. But yeah, we're just in the studio watching games. We'll take notes on our thoughts, or we'll talk to Elle about what we're seeing. That way she can tee us up. And it's fun because when you spend all day watching games, it's really easy from an analytical perspective to compare things that you saw from other teams. You know, like I remember, you know, we're watching the Tennessee NC State game recently. This was, what was that, Monday? I don't know. They all kind of run together. But we're watching Tennessee NC State, and I had just watched Notre Dame play Ole Miss, and Notre Dame's executing this zone defense with this incredible energy. And so you can make a reference like, you know, Tennessee needs that defensive energy that Notre Dame brought to their zone defense. And while I'm sitting here thinking about it, remember what this team did to that team, right? Like there's just, it's so much basketball at once, but it's so fun to compare the energy and the execution that we're seeing. So it's they're long days. I think the cool part about this coming weekend is we'll have, you know, 30 minutes in between games to really break down what we're seeing and preview what's coming up. And again, as we talk about how programming has grown, that's a big step. You know, like there have been times where a game finishes and you can't put a bow on it, you can't wrap it up, and to have some built-in windows to potentially do that this year will be a lot of fun.
If we exclude South Carolina,
right,
what teams so far do you have looked the best?
What teams have looked the best? You know, I've been really impressed with USC and Juju, and not just Juju, but for Mackenzie Forbes to be playing the way that she's playing, and their defensive energy. Like they look good. South Carolina, USC has looked good. UConn's looked good. I know they were in a close one with Syracuse, and Syracuse has one of the most elite scorers in the game.
Yeah.
But
former University of Buffalo product us to go to Syracuse. Yeah, she's a great player.
Yeah, I think for me, UConn, and maybe it's not like they look completely polished, but I have been surprised by their freshman, Ashlyn Shade, and the way she's playing. You know, I was a little worried about Connecticut, but because I just felt like it was all Paige Beckers and Aaliyah Edwards. But for Ashlyn Shade to come in and knock down four or five threes has been, you know, really good. Gonzaga's looked good. I think it's hard because some of the teams that have had blowouts, you're like, yeah, they look amazing. But then some of these other teams that are able to compete down the stretch, like Stanford winning in overtime without Cameron Brink, which she's got to stay out of foul trouble, but winning in overtime without Cameron Brink is not easy to do, you know. Or Baylor, the way they took on Virginia Tech, and I know Virginia Tech didn't have Liz Kittley, but that's a close game. And they made big plays. Duke was down double figures and then fought back and battled back. So I could talk about every team. Notre Dame, I will say, though, Notre Dame and their big three, though, Maddie Westbeld, Sonia Citron, and the electric freshman Hannah Hidalgo, those three look good. Like, the team looks great, but when I watch those three operate, I'm like, wow, yeah, they're tough. And the way they executed their defensive scheme in those first and second rounds, I know I'm rambling about multiple teams, but
no, it's good, though.
They all look good in different ways to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a podcast. It's sort of meant to ramble. The thing that's like so great to me is that once upon a time, all the attention would have been on UConn and Notre Dame. And in some ways, I wouldn't call them an afterthought, but in some ways, they're so far down the list of sort of like who, you know, gets the lion's share so far of the chatter in this tournament, you know, Iowa, South Carolina, LSU, et cetera.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right. I want to ask you about a potential matchup. I'm actually not so sure Iowa's getting past Colorado. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm gutsy enough to actually literally make the call as we are speaking here, but I'm close to it. I think that to me, that game sets up pretty nicely for Colorado, but we'll see. Maybe I also kind of believe there's maybe less pressure on Iowa to be away from home. And certainly for Caitlin, you sort of get away from every, you know, all the stuff that's taking your time up, and you get to just be on the road, as you know, and just sort of play a little freer. That said, if LSU and Iowa meet, Andre, I cannot tell you, I don't know how good the game will be, but I just think given everything that's surrounding both teams, you know, all the attention on Caitlin Clark, people probably not thinking Iowa could get to a national championship. LSU trying to be a defending champion, trying to repeat, having stretches where they look like the best team in basketball and other stretches where they don't even look like a tournament team. Kim Mulkey obviously surrounded by stuff that's going on with a potential Washington Post program story. I just feel like this would be like WrestleMania-ish or like, you know what I mean? Like a UFC event. It would feel like an event, which to me would be incredible for the women's basketball tournament in the Elite Eight. So again, if we do get there, I wonder how you just sort of see the spectacle of that matchup.
Yeah, that matchup could be amazing. And obviously, like we said, we have to give Colorado and UCLA a lot of credit too, because both LSU and Iowa could lose. Like
they could, yeah.
We might not get it at all. UCLA, yep. UCLA has the one player that I think can give Angel Reese a really hard time in, not the one player, but size,
but a player,
Yeah, and Lauren Betts is 6'7", and so you know that's a tough one. And then Colorado, the way they force turnovers, and you know they play the exact same way or similar to West Virginia, and Iowa struggled with West Virginia. So anyway, there's that. You already said it. I just wanted to expand on it. But for Iowa LSU, I really am interested, and I had LSU in my Final Four. I had LSU coming out of this region, even once I saw the bracket. Because I do think that with LSU and the way that their three guards can just score in so many different ways. And Haley Van Lint hasn't even had a great game yet.
No, she hasn't.
You know what I mean? So like LSU is escaping these teams in Middle Tennessee and in Rice. And Haley Van Lint hasn't even found her stride. So I'm just imagining, you know, LSU's three starting guards combined for 40 points, three of them. And then you have Angel Reese and Anissa Morrow on the inside. And what is Iowa? They're undersized in the post. They're undersized. Like Kate Martin sometimes has to guard post players. And even Hannah Stolke. I love Hannah Stolke and the energy that she plays with, but she is undersized. She can't box out both Angel Reese and Anissa Morrow. And so if you send two to try and keep Angel Reese, then you've only got a couple to try and keep Anissa Morrow off the glass. And so I do see they could zone, they could scheme. That's the one thing I think is underappreciated about Iowa is their ability to scheme defensively. But LSU and the way they have players that can make really confident shots, you know, like they can, same thing that we saw you know, last season in the national championship game, I was sagging off some players and LSU was like, okay, bet. I'm just going to step right in and take this three. Like, you're not going to make me second guess my game. And I think I see that same energy from LSU this season. LSU has to execute defensively a lot better. But, you know, that game, I think Caitlin would have to have a phenomenal performance. But she's going to need some help from her teammates, too. You know, watching that game against West Virginia sent two or three people at Caitlin and made her pass the ball and give up the ball. And from the three-point line, Caitlin was 5 of 14, and the rest of her teammates were 0 of 8. And that's the risk that teams are going to be willing to take now, especially after seeing those results from West Virginia. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to flood Caitlin and see if her teammates can make shots, because they've seen that sometimes they can't. So that matchup, it could be so much fun. Like, Caitlin's going to have to ball out. She's going to have a really big performance. And Iowa's going to have to battle on the glass. They're going to have to battle on the glass. But, yeah, I'm just, like, sitting here running through all these different scenarios in my head. And it could go either way, but they both have to get there first. And them getting there is a tall task in itself.
I agree with everything you just said. The one thing I am confident to say is I do not believe Iowa will beat either UCLA or LSU if they get there. But I consider UCLA LSU a coin flip, so you would not surprise me at all from that. And I'm with you. I think Caitlin Clark's going to have. You know what's interesting? Like, and again, I mean the Iowa program has been incredible, and you have to give their coaching staff you know, all the praise in the world. You know, I do feel like at the Elite Eight round, maybe the Sweet 16 round, I guess we'll see. But this is where I know they didn't, I don't think, if I'm remembering right, I don't know if they had any open scholarships, but I feel like that's where the transfer market, had they gotten like one more really quality big, just would make them a different, do you agree? Like, they'd be a very different team in when you get to this deep water if they had that like one additional 6'3", 6'2", you know what I'm saying? Like, inside player to add to what they have now.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. That was the thing when I was curious about this offseason. You know, they were losing not only Monica Sonato, but they're losing McKenna Warnock. And McKenna Warnock played that four position a lot. And so you now have a sophomore stepping in to be the main center who's undersized. And then you don't really have another player to play with Hannah Stolke in the post. So that was what I was looking at coming into the season. And again, like you said, it could have been roster spots, or it could have been, you know, Iowa City compared to some other cities that are options for the transfer portal.
Like, yeah, it's a great point.
You're Lauren Betts, you know, and she was at Stanford and she's trying to decide where she wants to go. Like, Iowa over LA, like, that's a tough sell. Like, it really is. I think, too, what people don't always think about, and this, it can be seen as a pro, it can be seen as a con, but think about, my comparison is going to be Steph Curry, because I was just talking to his teammate about this, Jonathan Kuminga. I was talking to them when I had their game a while back about learning to play with Steph Curry. And it takes time. Like, there are situations where if you get the ball, you're going to look to attack. But when you play with Steph Curry, when you get the ball, you're probably going to look to immediately kick it back to him because he's relocating, right? And those things take time. That's very similar to Caitlin Clark. Like, it takes time to learn how to play with Caitlin. That team is good because they all know how to play with Caitlin. And that, to a transfer, if I'm a transfer and I only have 1 year, it's similar to Haley Van Lith at LSU. Like, she went somewhere where she had to learn something completely new. And what happened? It's taken a lot of time to come together. And even when it does come together, it doesn't come together consistently. And so when I think about transfers going to Iowa, if they only have a year, it might take that long to figure out how to play with Caitlin, not for any reason other than how much she has the ball in her hands and how much she moves and how many shots she takes. Those are mental adjustments for the game that I hope transfers think of when they're making their decision, but would have had to have been something on their mind when it came to potentially transferring to Iowa. Again, I don't know if Iowa looked at any transfers, but there are some factors there that, you know, if I have a year, do I want to spend that year trying to figure out how I can have success alongside, you know, someone like Caitlin, and what does that look like? And I think there are more question marks there. Even though Caitlin's a great passer, it's still an adjustment, you know, that you have to make. Whereas you could go to a team like UCLA, again, I'm just talking about Lauren Betts, where it's like, hey, you're going to come in and you're going to be the five, and you're going to do very similar things that you've done before, because we have a more, you know, traditional style team. We run this offense, et cetera. So I think that was what they needed, but a little harder of a sell on multiple fronts to get a transfer in there.
That's a great point. And the only thing I would add to that is, one, I just think if you're going to be honest, like, there's a certain kind of player who wants to play like in Iowa, who maybe or most likely might be like Midwest based, and they want to play in the Big Ten. You know, if it's a 1 year kind of transfer, or let's say two, you know this, like things like weather would be involved, or NIL be involved. Like, these are real things. And if you're, you know, a really, really good player, and then I think you'd have to have the you'd want to be someone who'd want to play with her. Like, you'd sort of like, which would be, you know, really sort of thoughtful thing to sort of be as a 20 or 21 year old, where you're like, you know, I'd love to be part of, like, you know, it's like LeBron and Chris Paul and those guys always talk about, like, I want to play with this person together. Which leads me, I have two last things for you. I'm glad you brought up that transfer thing, because I find this fascinating. USC has a great class coming in. I think they have the number one ranked class coming in for 2024. It's either them or South Carolina, last I looked. And so obviously, you know, next year Juju's going to have so much more talent around her, even if it's young. My thought would be, like, presuming that she's going to stay for at least 3 years, if I was a great player somewhere and, like, I was thinking about transferring, like, one, I'd get to play with this transcendent player, and two, I'd get to play in, like, paradise, Hollywood, you know, Los Angeles. Do you think someone's going to, and again, I don't know if they have any scholarships open, et cetera, but doesn't that feel like this transfer market, if Lindsey Gottlieb has her eye on, like, one person, she'd have a great chance to get that player?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when we're talking about things you can sell for to a transfer, like location, Juju only being a sophomore, the team already potentially having the success that they've had this season, you know, I think it'll be a really easy sell, you know, especially with some of the pieces that they might have departing. So depending on what coach is looking for, Coach Gottlieb is looking for, it could be very, I don't want to say very easy, but it's a great sell. Like, listen, you can come to LA, play with Juju. There've already been so many things put out about Juju and the type of teammate that she is, and those sort of things that I think benefit transfers. And two, there will be some holes that need to be filled from the people that are departing. So there'll be immediate space to come in, and, you know, especially for a veteran or a player that's maybe had some experience, be like, hey, we need you in this role, and this is the exact spot you're going to fill. And I think it lines up well for people that potentially would be wanted by Coach Gottlieb. I don't think it would be a very difficult pitch to whoever they go for.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, last one. So this is my, like, I love this kind of stuff to sort of think about. And I put this out on Twitter, and, you know, naturally there were some people who agreed and other people who would say you're crazy, whatever. It's a great thing about it. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to draft two players, your first pick and second pick, okay? From every player who is playing in college basketball today.
Okay.
You are drafting them for the long term. I'm not going to tell you whether it's about, like, you're drafting them because you want to win, let's say, like, the most WNBA championships, or you want to build your franchise based on ticket sales and marketing. So I need to know from you who your first pick is in the overall college draft that I'm setting you up on, and who's number two. And then I'll tell you mine.
Ooh, that's tough. Who am I drafting? You're going to have to edit out a lot of this downtime while I think about this.
Okay. All right, I'll tell you mine first, and then I'll give you a little more time. Okay. I'm taking Juju Watkins first overall, because I believe she will ultimately be the best player out of everyone who is currently playing in college basketball today.
Mm-hmm.
My number two pick will be Paige Bueckers, because I ultimately think that she will be a better player than Caitlin Clark, and I still think, even as popular as Caitlyn is now, that Paige will ultimately be not necessarily her equal in marketing might, but close. Caitlyn, by the way, would be my three, and I think Camila Cardoza would be my four in terms of who is playing right now. But that is what I would do. I would go Juju one, Paige two, and Caitlyn three. And obviously, there's a lot of people out there who'd be like, you're crazy. You got to take Caitlin Clark first because you can basically sell out tickets for the next, you know, however many years. So it's really how you sort of want to think about it.
Yeah.
So, okay, now I've filibustered for you. So now I want your
okay, expertise. That was good. I would take Juju for sure because I think her ceiling is so high. Like, I think she has the highest ceiling, you know, that I've seen. And you know what's crazy is because Juju's so, she's just so good and she's so smooth and she's so like similar to Paige. Like, Paige is just so smooth. Like, it's ridiculous how similar Paige's game is. I honestly think I would go Juju one. And then, and this is if we're thinking about, like, I don't know about.
Number two is the tough one, because I think Juju is honestly Juju should be your answer, but it's number two that's hard.
Juju's a tough one. You know who I cannot get over? And I just think the joy that she plays with and the, like, elation that she plays with on both ends of the floor. Like, she's just someone I want on my team is Hannah Hidalgo.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
I really do. Like, I would go Juju, then I would go Hannah, then I'd probably go Paige. Well, I need a post. Juju, Hannah, you said four. So I would go Juju, Hannah, Paige, Camila, because I would want a center. I would want a five. And, like, in putting a team together, like, if I was really trying to put a team where they all are, you know, great, like, leaders, and they all just have an aspect to their game that I really appreciate, and I think they could play well together. That, like, those four would be who I.
All right. The only thing I would say is this: again, obviously, Hannah Hidalgo is a great, great player. But when you know, as part of this draft, you know, you're moving to the pros. You're okay with her height and size in terms of being effective than WNBA.
I thought you said we weren't going to the WNBA.
No, the draft is basically who you're taking for the long term as you're building your make-believe franchise.
I see. Okay. I was just thinking, like, the draft, if I was making a long term.
Oh, I should have spelled it out. We won't edit this out then. The people can mock me for my not asking.
No, this is good. I was thinking, like, if I was drafting a collegiate team.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, okay. So I should have explained it better. You are drafting players who are currently in college for a long term, like, fantasy kind of pick, which includes them as pros.
Got it. I see. Yeah, you know what? Like, I know Hannah's 5'6", but yeah, I'm still going with Hannah. I really
okay. You don't have to change your and we agree Juju is our number one, right?
100%, 100%. And like,
all right, like,
Hannah would probably be fifth. I need a post player, and I mean, I need a four player in there at some point. But like, if we're just sitting here, you know, talking players that really stand out to me, like Becky Hammon's 5'6". Like,
I know.
One of the greatest players that was underappreciated, undervalued, now is one of the greatest coaches this game has seen. Like, she had success in the WNBA at 5'6". So I think if there is another player, you know, there are a couple, actually, when I think of some smaller guards that just have the skill set to have success in the W, Hannah Hidalgo would be one of them.
Okay, listen, the Notre Dame people who complain that she's sort of not talked about as enough as other players, I agree with all that. I think that's legit. I think she's an incredible player and will only get better. But I do disagree with Andrea. There would be other players I would take before her because as I'm translating her game to the pros. But, you know, listen, Notre Dame guards, generally speaking, you don't go wrong with them.
Skylar
Diggins, Jewel Lloyd, like the list is Neil Ivey, the list is long and very impressive. So
long list of success.
Yeah. All right. Andrea, everybody watch Andrea Carter this month on ESPN, or actually floats into April, of course. But the amount of great games, or at least great games, what it looks like on paper coming up is incredible. Again, just check out the schedule for the Sweet 16, which is Friday, March 29th and Saturday, March 30th. And then the Elite Eight games on March 31st and April 1st. And those games are all between ESPN and ABC. Finally, your boss is finally, after all these years, Andrea, finally listen to me and start putting the games on network. And look what they've been rewarded with. So this is good. The programming windows are fantastic. These are unbelievable games. And then obviously when Andrea and her crew get to the Final Four in Cleveland, you're really not going to go wrong. Whoever ends up playing in those semifinals and national championship game are going to be really, really elite teams. Andrea, it's been great to see your career moving on. I know you. I think you recently signed a multi-year deal with ESPN, so congratulations on that. It's it's been very cool to see you also expand from women's basketball, you know, and doing the NBA. And I know college football is something you're interested in, too, so that's great to see. And hopefully you'll come back down the road. Thank you, Andrea Carter, for joining me.
Anytime. Thanks.
You got it on the Sports Media Podcast. Back in the studio, my thanks to Andrea Carter for her time and insight. If you like these kind of podcasts, head to the archives. You should find some stuff you like. Becky Lynch on March 26th, a guest on this podcast. Her given name is Rebecca Quinn, but you better know her as Becky Lynch from the WWE. She has a new book that is fantastic. Cannot recommend it enough, and she gave us an hour on this podcast. And really, really enjoyed that insight. Jack McCallum, the longtime Hall of Fame basketball writer, came on to talk about his book, Louisa Thomas of the New Yorker. Had Iowa journalists on who cover Caitlin Clark. Speaking of Caitlin Clark, from the Daily Iowa. Check that one out. Pablo Torre was a guest on this podcast recently. Andrew Marchand, Peter King, Sue Bird, and the list goes on and on. Again, if you like this stuff, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast continues. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thank you to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.